You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 104. This minute begins with Shaw saying, "This ship is taking off," and ends with Vickers saying, "Yannick, this is my ship." I love the soundtrack in this minute. This is the track Collision. Those six notes you heard are repeated throughout the film. You hear them in my opening theme as well, which is why I picked it. It's the auditory foundation of Prometheus. They added more horns in this minute, I think to tie it more in with the engineer specifically. Otherwise, I believe this is just the musical theme of the movie, unconnected to any specific character or concept. Early on, they envisioned filming this in either Morocco or the Mojave Desert. But I think Iceland proved to be the ideal location. Ridley described it as such. Here it is, so rough and Jurassic-like, and that proved decisive. It looks unique and cold and oppressive in just the right way. I couldn't imagine this scene being shot in some sunny yellow desert, or worse, they'll try to color grade the hell out of it and it wouldn't look right because, well, that almost never looks right. I wonder, though, if the idea to go for a warmer-looking location was a nod to the initial Alien script by Dan O'Bannon, in which the planet was described as having an orange sky and an otherwise warm palette. But I think Alien has always had such a bleak look for a reason. It works. That's something so iconic about it. It should be cold and eerie. I imagine standing in this location in Iceland, and it would have a spooky quality to it. You don't get that from Mojave or Morocco. It's too bright and warm, more appropriate for the Martian. Those kinds of deserts present their own dangers, but it's a different kind of thing. And I think Lawrence of Arabia perfectly encapsulates that danger. It's not about a sense of unspeakable dread or paranoia. It is about the maddening, inescapable void of sand. As Prometheus takes inspiration from this film, I have to wonder if that was a consideration, and how different the film would have been in such a location. Once upon a time, I used to do cosplay modeling, so I was no stranger to scouting locations. And it is fascinating to discover how much a location or lighting informs the image you're trying to convey, or the story you're trying to tell. Even observing my own apartment throughout the day and how the light conveys a different mood. Morning light can be soft, it can have a heavenly quality. Midday, sometimes it can be oppressive or overwhelming. The afternoon can be dramatic and high contrast. To me, sunsets always convey the idea of things winding down, time is running out, things are coming to a close. But then nighttime is another world entirely. Strangely, I find overcast days don't all look the same. Some look nice and dramatic, others just make everything look flat and dull and washed out. Still, I think certain locations are only ever going to give you a particular vibe no matter what. Iceland is Iceland and Morocco is Morocco. And Iceland gave them exactly what they needed. That LV-223 doesn't look like any other planet to me. We have so many planets in science fiction that they all tend to blur together. There's the desert planets, there's the ice planets, there's the volcano planets, but Prometheus shows us a world that isn't quite like anything we've seen before. It's not profoundly alien, it's subtly unfamiliar. Film is about conveying feeling. Everything looks just right. It's not like real life where things happen regardless of whether the lighting and the location creates the ideal vibe. It is visual storytelling. Every decision should mean something. I think I've mentioned this before, but I love that in The Dark Knight, Nolan shows Batman drive into a tunnel during the day, and when he comes out, it's nighttime. And this was done purely because he felt that's what each of those scenes called for. And I have no problem with that. Most people didn't even notice.
It's carrying death, and it's headed for Earth.
Here we have what I call a crossroads moment. Here's a big decision to be made, and the choice radically alters the outcome of the plot. With the additional hindsight of Covenant, this is a fun thing to consider. What happens if the crew made a different choice? The engineer's ship is more than likely significantly faster than anything made by humans, so there's no chance of outpacing it. But, okay, what if they'd been able to set the ship on autopilot and everyone got out alive? We know the ship was capable of steering itself while everyone was in hypersleep. What if Alien Covenant had been about Shaw, Bjanik, Vickers, Ravel, and Chance, and whoever else was left on the ship trying to survive David? This is a cast we have already established a relationship with. As much as I think they did a great job of getting us to connect with the Covenant crew, why not just follow this group? The one we already have. I know we usually get very little carryover from one Alien movie to the next, but it's not like it's a firm rule. It seems a little too convenient that these characters are willing to die with so little hesitation. And we know there are at least a few dozen unnamed crew members, so what? Did they all decide to die too? It's all too damn convenient. This is a trope I noticed even as a kid. It actually doesn't have a specific name, as far as I can tell. But it's basically a character warehouse clear out, that's what I call it. We don't need these guys anymore, so we just have to kill them off. I always felt a disconnect with these kinds of scenes. There's no argument or hesitation. Maybe it happens so fast they don't have time to think it through, I don't know, but I found it really difficult to imagine people are going to choose death so easily. An example of showing a more realistic and empathetic take on this kind of scenario is the HBO series Chernobyl. Many people bravely choose to enter irradiated zones knowing they will die a slow, horrible death for the sake of others. And it's so heart-wrenchingly real. You can feel these characters agonizing over the decision. I know that isn't exactly the pace Prometheus is going for, but there had to have been a way to make me feel something in this moment. And I just don't. It doesn't seem like these guys are preparing to die. I don't feel the weight of their sacrifice. I've seen short films that inspire that sense of loss. Why can't this 2-hour movie do the same? Actually, I even feel for the Marines in Aliens more than I do the Prometheus crew in this scene. And speaking of, looking at the original 4 Alien movies, what makes that work is that everyone's picked off one by one, especially in the first Alien, and everyone's death has significance, and you notice that when they wipe out both Lambert and Parker, who are wiped out at the same time, you don't really know what happens to them, but even then, that's still more significant than just a group of people just choosing to die. I have to wonder how well-defined this series of prequels was in Ridley's mind, how much was planned out from the beginning. It feels like, beyond wanting to see more of the engineers and David, he hasn't got a specific plan. Which is not a problem, I like that he just wants to experiment and play. The man's been making movies almost as long as my parents have been alive, let the man have some fun. When it's coming from one artist's mind, I think this improvisational style of storytelling is acceptable. Whereas something like the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is an absolute mess because it's a war of egos between two directors. It didn't come from an earnest singular place. And that's why I will always defend the Alien prequels. I think it's a rare treat to see an auteur director given this much creative freedom with a major intellectual property. Say what you will about Prometheus and Covenant, but they're not your paint-by-numbers Marvel blockbusters. I want to see more even if it fails because it's the experiment that I enjoy, which I suppose is fitting in a series about experimenting on the alien itself. So what does the crew of the Covenant bring to the plot? Really, it's not them, it's the ship and Walter that matter. The ship gives David a way of escaping. It gives him new subjects to torture, I mean experiment on. And Walter represents what synthetics have become in the time David's been gone from Earth. Still, I really do think there was a movie in between Prometheus and Covenant. Imagine the remainders of the Prometheus crew being picked off one by one by David's creations. And then we see the twisted romance between Shaw and David and finally her death. Then you show us Covenant and it would have much greater impact and meaning. There would still have to be a fourth film to wrap it all up, and maybe that's the problem. Ridley has said he wanted to make many, many more Alien prequels, like 5 or 6 or something like that. But I'll bet the studio told him, well, you've got 3, make it work. So perhaps there was every intention of making a film between Prometheus and Covenant, but it just didn't turn out that way for logistical reasons. Although it is clear that they had no further plans for Bjanik and Vickers and the lot, of course, because, you know, they killed them off here. Which is a shame. Come on, you've got Charlize Theron and Idris Elba. Make proper use of them. Although, I'm not sure they could have afforded them by the time they did Covenant. I think even Fassbender got less than he normally would. He was just down because he loves the project. And, you know, who wouldn't want to play David? Seems like fun. The downside of a prequel is that you are bound to certain things. So, of course, Earth is safe and has never encountered xenomorphs or engineers, because we know that's not the case in later Alien movies. Still, Alien Covenant, set on Earth, would have been fun. This scene plays out basically the same as the scripts, with one noticeable addition. Here's Engineers, page 110. Interior, Juggernaut, pilot chamber. On the floor, David's eyes open. With his jaw, he hitches his severed head around, gets his eyes on the sleeper. In the pilot chair, the sleeper convulses. An alien erupts from his chest. Big as a wolf, even at its birth. Dark grey, armoured, lethal, more hideous than any chestburster we've seen. An ultramorph. It wails hideously. The sleeper dies. The alien slithers free. David then tells the Prometheus that the engineer is dead, but the Juggernaut's autopilot will soon kick in. So even then, they aren't any safer. It's a Kobayashi Maru. Watts slash Shaw also sees Yannick die, impaled by glass before she gets out in her escape pod. Not really a necessary thing to show either, but that's to be expected in an early draft. You got a few too many things going on to get from point A to point B, but that's usually deliberately done to give the filmmakers ideas and options. Let's say the engineer succeeds in bombing Earth. Is that really the end for mankind? We know Mars has been colonized by this point, and potentially other planets too. So even with Earth gone, there are still thousands of people elsewhere in the solar system, right? I also wonder, in this alternate scenario, what the Prometheus does. The engineer's ship gets away, do they chase after it? What happens to David? Does he just lie there decapitated until he powers down? I always love playing with these what-ifs. The other thing is, if you bomb Earth, does the mutagen spread across the entire planet? Can it get across oceans? You know, civilizations living on remote islands, are they safe? It would be an interesting scenario to see play out. Obviously, that's never going to happen in any of the Alien prequels, but maybe at some other point we'll just see that in whatever Disney's making now. Apparently they do want to make Alien sequels, not prequels. Who can say? Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TaravianDesigns.com, TaravianDesigns, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. If you would like to be a Patreon supporter, go to patreon.com/TaravianDesigns. I would like to thank my supporters, Mark Boda, Tariq, William Elkhart, Simon Haynes, and Gray Malkin.